Hi, ho, listeners. This is Jonathan Mate.
This is Melissa. And this apparently is... I'm doing this podcast with Mr. Wilson. Which I did not know.
I thought you were going to say howdy doody. I'm not even old enough to remember what that is. Anyway, welcome to the Unboxing Story podcast, where we talk about the meaning behind our favorite movies, games, and books, and whatnot. Today is games. Another game-centric episode, because Detroit Become Human came out. It's another David Cage John, where John is thing in Philadelphia, in case you guys don't know. So he did a bunch of... he's kind of like the granddaddy of including more RPG, more high-profile RPG games that are like AAA titles that get a lot of attention. Heavy Rain came out somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s, and was kind of like a cultural thing for gamers, you know, to see this thing where, like, part of the challenge is cooking your kid's TV dinner in the right way by clicking, X, you know, a couple times. But as we've been talking about Detroit Become Human and other RPGs, I was kind of breaking it down into a couple different types of things, because Melissa, you said that you played Lord of the Rings Online, and I had played different MMOs that are pretty much just like you get different quests from people and you go to try to do that thing. You can also have in MMOs, you can have people that join you, but it seems recently we've ventured from that into, like, what they call visual novels, where there's a lot of these that are, like, dating games online, yeah. Where, like, the depending on what it is, you get married or you sleep with the person, depending on which choices you make. Or you get, like, really high-class, artsy-fartsy ones, like, I think it's Letters to Esther or something. I butchered that for any fans of that game. I'm sorry. But kind of the point is that you're going to this isolated cabin and you're learning about something that happened in the past. So it's very much not like, I guess the only lose condition is that you don't
find
everything and you don't, you know, there's literally, you're just learning about this thing. You're having this gameplay experience and it's not, there's no win or lose condition. There's no, you know, end lose screen where GLaDOS laughs at you because you didn't find the cake. I saw a lot of, there was a big uptick in horror RPGs, because what I didn't remember, Slender Man is a big one, because you're not fighting Slender Man. The whole thing is that there are 8 notes hidden throughout the forest and you have to go find them, and you can't really fight, you, like I said, you can't fight Slender Man, you just have to find the notes, and if you find all 8 notes, then he goes away, I guess you win. Amnesia Dark Descent was a big thing a couple years ago that, you couldn't fight the monsters in this thing. First you wake up in this weird dungeon thing, and you don't know how you got there. And there are these creatures that are in all over the place, and you're trying to figure out what the mystery is. But the horror kind of comes from the fact that, unlike other games, there's not really like a weapon that you can use to fend them off. It's just, let's not go down that corridor because I hear noises over there. I'm going to go over here and learn more about, you know, whatever mad scientist trapped me down here. And so some of these I know from having watched people do playthroughs of, to name a few, Amnesia, L.A. Noir, that's more like a mystery game, and Fable's Wolf Among Us. That was kind of like a cross between the two, because you do have action, quick time events where you're mashing a button and performing certain tasks at a certain time, and you make certain decisions. By like doing interrogations where you pick certain dialogue boxes, and it's like depending on what you pick, you get a different outcome. So tell everybody about Oxenfree, because that seemed like it was an interesting game.
It was. And if anybody intends to play it, just skip ahead, because really telling you anything about the game will ruin it for you, really. It is kind of part mystery, because you don't really know what's going on this island that you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the game is discovering notes from who used to live there and discovering other parts of what's going on. It is partly horror, because there is things on the island that are trying to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't really understand what's going on. And it basically plays, I guess, kind of more like one of those visual novels, because all you get a choice of is what to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it's kind of just plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it starts time looping.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time through, it's just straight through. And you start to realize what the mystery is and what things you can discover and how to talk to these creatures that are on this island. But then you can play it again. And when you play it again, things change, because now you have left messages for yourself.
Right.
Or the creatures know what you're doing, and so they start time looping you within the game, which they didn't do the first time through. Like, it's all these things that are different the more times you play it.
Right.
But it was fascinating to see what those differences were and what you could learn and what options you had. Mm. Some of them were very silly, but some of them were very important. I did eventually accomplish what I wanted to, the main goal of what I wanted to in the game.
Right.
And I could probably play it again and accomplish a different goal now that I know what they are. But like you said, it's not really necessarily a win condition, I guess. I guess it depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, I think that's an interesting point to make, that, like, in one benefit of an RPG in a game like that, that has different, like, branches, like, you're opening up different possibilities, and you're kind of deciding what you want to do. That's something that you're not going to get in a traditional linear game, where, like, they're telling you what you want, and, you know, whether you win or lose, they're deciding what that is defined as.
Right.
So some visual novels and some RPGs, you're basically deciding, okay, I think that winning means I save this person's life, not this person. And I think that's an interesting part of it that you don't get. There's two things. One is nuance, because there might be some choices where you're finding, like, oh, you know, I make this decision because I think it's the right thing, but there's more consequences for that decision. Like, that's another big RPG that I kind of forgot about. It's kind of an action RPG called, Deus Ex. And those games very much are based around the idea that you can do a stealthy type of, like, you know, you can knock people out or something, and it's make things harder on you, but it's kind of like the Paragon way of going about it. It's the, I'm making the right decision, even though it's the more hard way to play this game, versus just blowing people away, and the game might reward you for those things, but it's also showing you that you're not the best person ever. So I haven't actually played that, but it's an interesting part, and that I think that's also in Fallout, which is another big RPG series where you get the morality of different choices. And I think Fallout and Mass Effect both kind of work that way, where they have kind of like a couple of different endings, and rather than which we're about to get into with Detroit Become Human, it seems like there are different ways that you can quote unquote fail, and then it just switches to a different character, and then you get the rest of their story. Rather than just do that, there's like one main character, and you get different ways that it can end, and it's basically like you know, what's difficult about that is, like, for example, with Mass Effect 3, there was a big complaint because there was really only two ways for it to end. And so there were a lot of people saying, well, my version of Shepard, the main character, wouldn't have picked either of those things. And I thought the whole this whole time that I was getting something that would branch off to maybe four or five different choices. But what it actually turned out to be was kind of like a closed loop of, there's a lot of sections in the middle where, like, say this person dies because you made this choice. But what is actually very difficult to do, and what they had chosen not to do, was actually try to make it so that it branched out more like a pyramid, where you got this choice because you made, and there's things that are closed off, and it actually puts you out further on this thing. It's more like there's three starting places, and it all comes back to these three, you know, very set versions of this character. Well, I think it started out as two endings, and then they added a third that was more of like a, I guess, a mix of the two, or some middle ground. I don't think it made them happy anyway, but it's I think that there's different types of challenges that you can have, and different win conditions that you can get from a game that gives you multiple choices that you're not just going to get from one where they've planned out the story. They've kind of given you, this is how you win, and then you come out at the other side with, like, I've won or lost. So the one debate that I wanted to have, and it was, this is kind of in honor of John Bain, Total Biscuit, who some gamers might know by that name, who he did a podcast called Co-Optional, and it was a big topic because of the different types of gamers that were represented. Dodger, who's Brooklay, is a female gamer who did a lot of anime visual novels. Jesse Cox is a big, you know, he liked a lot of the resurgence of more story-based games, but then Total Biscuit was much more of a strategic game player, and he coined the term, I don't know if he invented it, but he would always call them walking simulators. And since he passed away in May 24th, very recently, I thought it would be good to talk about, like, that delineation in games, and whether, what your opinion is in terms of, do you think that what do you, when you go to play a game, as somebody that plays more RPGs, you know, with and tabletop things, do you think that you're losing something in terms of, like, because we were kind of mocking during playing Detroit Become Human, where you're just sitting there washing dishes, do you think that there's something that you get from these types of games that you're not going to get from another one? Do you think that there's drawbacks to playing this type of game versus something else that is more linear?
So, I prefer this type of game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the linear ones, especially the ones that focus more on combat,
mm-hmm.
you need to learn very well how to fight. And I know that sounds really silly, because all you're doing is pushing a bunch of buttons.
Right.
But in my brain, because I get to such a stress level when I'm trying to fight things
uh-huh.
on a computer, that I kind of lose it. It's too much input coming in, and I don't know what to push, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. That's
uh-huh.
the thing. A lot of us, I've talked to other people that prefer this sort of story, not quieter, but less confrontational,
stress.
Less
yeah.
stressful kind of game. We don't think we're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
And because there is this win condition, because there is this supposed understanding of, okay, this is the type of person who's playing this game, and they know exactly how to play this, and they know how to fight things, and they know what buttons to push,
mm-hmm.
that, or especially something like Overwatch or other MMOs where you are with a team of people, and they are counting on you to get certain things done within a certain amount of time in the best way possible, there's so much pressure to put up the pun. It's like, I have 5 minutes, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm going to do this wrong, and you just get mad.
Right, and it's not, there are some, I would, there's, it's an interesting moniker for this type of psychological thing that happens, because there's, like, rewarding and satisfying is what I've heard told, like, when you're playing Super Mario Brothers, and you're seeing, like, and this was an interesting thing about 80s games, is that, like, something like Mega Man would show you, okay, this is what you have to do. And so, like, say, like, in this side of the screen you see the platforms appearing and disappearing. You know, okay, in order to do this, I have to jump at the right time.
Right, to get on the
get
platform
it.
When it's there. Which is why, so even with the more stressful games, I will play it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And try it over and over again, but then I'll tend to get frustrated because I do have to try it 50 million times to actually get it right.
Right.
Or if I'm playing with people, I will not play online with strangers, right? I will play with people I know who know me and who don't care if I mess it up.
Right.
That's my rule for those games. Whereas these games, RPGs, and especially this kind of thing where it's very cinematic and you get the emotional pull of your character. I think it's fascinating and I love it. Even the one where you're the chick doing the dishes. Now, some of that might be more specific to this story specifically, because you are playing an android that has been treating like a servant, and you'd rather be doing other things, but you've been told to do the dishes.
Right.
So that's what you're stuck doing.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to feel like you're stuck doing that.
Right.
As opposed to going up and helping the girl like you want to.
Right.
But in other games, even things like, well, that's another thing. So I'm very specific, apparently. As to which ones I actually like. Because most of the, I guess you're calling them action RPGs, stuff like Lord of the Rings Online and stuff. Yes, you have, okay, I get a quest and I go kill the monster, and I can try that a couple times till I get it right.
Right.
But then there's other things that you need to do.
Fetch
quests. The stuff that they call grinding, right?
Yeah.
Where you're trying to get enough gold or you're trying to get enough whatever, and you just do the same exact thing over and over again, and that drives you nuts. Because as a human being, yes, you might have to go fish now and then, when you need fish. But nobody wants
apparently
to do that.
Apparently that's a big Final Fantasy thing, is that there are enough of those little things that are satisfying within themselves that people will actually just go fish and cook the fish.
Well, I guess
and
when
have
I
fun
played,
doing it.
When I played The Hobbit on Lord of the Rings, that I didn't mind.
Oh, that actually
fishing.
Made it cool.
That was fun.
Uh-huh.
It was
I did that with Spider-Man because it was fun to just swing around.
Right.
And you
so there's some there's sometimes where they do. They make it fun.
Yeah.
And you don't mind going and doing those things.
But sometimes, like you're saying, it's grinding.
Right.
It's
like there's like guilds you're trying to get impressed with you. And you just go and hunt boar for like 3 hours and you're like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But the fishing actually feels like you're hanging out quiet somewhere fishing, which is nice. That's kind of what you want when you're fishing. I don't know. It's odd. I guess different people like different bits.
Right.
But I like this level of, I don't know what we're calling this, visual novel, whatever this is, cinematic, RPG.
Well, there's mystery elements where you're given other, and it's an interesting way to talk about deduction because you're not told specifically by the game to investigate.
Right, but you know you're there to investigate.
As you go around, you see that there are things highlighted by different light-up drawings. So you can go and investigate, and it gives you more options later on when you're interrogating or during hostage situations.
Right.
And
so that's the more obvious one that's on here, is that character's storyline is very detective-y and very, okay, I need to investigate the clues, and that will open up options
so,
for me later.
Let me use the... So Detroit Become Human, for those who don't know, is a game based on the idea that there are these androids who are humanoid in nature. They're not just like, you know, Rosie the robot from the Jetsons. They're very much like, they look human, they have some kind of biology to them, they have blood, that's blue. and so you're playing as three different characters. You have Jesse Williams, the actor, is mocapped as I don't know what his name is, but he's
the cop?
No, the guy that works for the painter.
Marcus.
So Marcus works for a painter, and his thing is kind of that this painter guy really does treat him like a human, and is trying to get him to explore his feelings. There's a scene where she asks him to paint, and then he just replicates a statue, and he says, no, you have to, you know, look inside yourself and see what you, you know, you have to comment on things and, you know, express yourself, not just replicate what you see. You have Kara, who works for this jerk, who's an abusive father, and so the tension there is whether you're going to, you know,
intervene or not.
And then you have a cop who, at the beginning, is in this hostage negotiation situation, and then later on, a very, we're not sure whether it's a similar model or the same person or what, it looks the same. This android is investigating another murder, and so you have very much like interrogation tactics. So what's interesting to me is that because it's taking on this kind of like social justice type allegory, what's strange is that the say like in the situation of Kara, it's kind of suggesting that like you're sitting there washing dishes, and because in real life you would rather not be washing dishes, the fact that you're being made to do something is kind of suggesting like, you know, this is not a challenge, this is torture.
Yeah.
And so like what I think
but even then, like, I think it was a really clever way. I mean, yes, yeah, so that I think that's part of the feeling you're supposed to get from
uh-huh.
it. But it was a clever way, instead of making you do investigations like the other guy does, like the cop
uh-huh.
does, her doing chores led you to options that you could use later, too.
Right.
You knew the layout of the house. You knew where the gun was hidden. You knew all this
right.
stuff that you would not have known if you hadn't gone around and did all the chores.
Right.
So I thought it was a clever way of putting in the, you know, here's a little task you have to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like, here's a little task you have to do so that you know where the gun is. Like, that's not, it wasn't that obvious.
Right.
But it was a clever way of putting that in there so that you now not only feel like, yes, I'm a servant to this horrible person who hates me,
mm-hmm.
but this,
yeah.
now I know how to get out of the house if I have to.
Right. And I think that the, what's interesting is that you're not really sure in these situations, because it does give you kind of two, like, you at some point in both of these stories, in Marcus's and in Kara's, you get the option to disobey what you're programmed to do. And in both situations, we won't tell you which ones we've chosen and what they do, so that you can play it yourself and find out. But I'll say that, like, in the one situation, it seemed like a very good outcome when you disobeyed. And kind of owned this, like, I was just like, I see something wrong.
Right, and I
want to
do
something about
what
it.
I have to do.
And in the other one, it seemed like it was a very good outcome. So it does seem like they're introducing the nuance, and I think that's what makes it a little difficult to judge this early on in this kind of, like, because it seems like it's not, you're not getting, like, a Call of Duty or something of, like, RPG games yet. David Cage seems to be one of the only guys making these complex of a game based on that
hard.
Idea.
I can't imagine how hard it is to
right.
do this.
Right, so that's the credit I'll give it, is that
and
they're very difficult.
And especially make it look that good.
Uh-huh.
The way, I mean, it looks really good. You feel like you're in a movie.
Yeah, that was one of the big deals about, what's it called, about Heavy Rain, and that's why it was a big deal, was that it was a prestige title from PlayStation to show this is what our processors can do. And I think that's why David Cage has been given the clout that he's had to make these games, because they're very good renderings and graphically they're very beautiful to watch. And so you get, that's the one benefit of it, is that you get these cinematic type emotional story arcs that you wouldn't get in another game. What makes it a little difficult in terms of like thinking about the choices is that it's hard as a gamer who is used to a very say you're comparing this to an MMO, there's a lot of different quests that you can try to take,
mm-hmm.
and because it's kind of a dichotomy, because it's so linear and there are some quests that mean a little bit less than the main story that you have to do, you only really get the two choices, at least at this point in the game. So in real life, there might be any infinite amount of things that you could do in this situation. There's not really, you know, one choice or another. But I do like that it seems like with these things, it's not, they do have multiple branched out consequences, and you'll see that it's not just, you know, it's not just trying to paint, like, every person in power is an incompetent tyrant that wants to, you know, rule over you, and the only way to solve this problem is for all the robots to disobey their masters and stuff.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like it's calling for an uprising. It's just each individual one is making a choice.
Or
at some point.
you can make the case maybe that it is, but that it's showing you. But these are the consequences that happen when you just when you, maybe this early on in the thing you just resort to violence in this or that situation. So it definitely it's well written.
And John has been very nice about not always choosing the violent option, because there are certain characters I wanted dead from the beginning, and I was yelling at him to beat them up, and he wouldn't listen to me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, when there's a
you'll
nice
see if we ever live stream the both of us playing this game, you'll hear.
Oh yeah. So
arguments.
So we're gonna do quick plugs, because we're hoping to do some streams of this in preparation for the live stream that we're gonna do June 30th. We're setting up a charity event for a local invitational game of Arecibo, and it's going to be in support of Puerto Rican disaster relief. So you can donate at bit.ly/RPG for Puerto Rico.
Oh, you made a thing.
Yeah.
Are you sure it works? Because I didn't think... Anyway, you can also go to podpledge.com/Arecibo. That works as well.
Oh, okay. And there... You can pay to be part of the Secret Council. And how many seats do we have left if you're in the Philadelphia
area?
The
Secret Council is open to however many. We only have one seat left at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go to the merchandise section to find that.
Yeah.
But the Secret Council is open to whoever is able to get onto the Twitch stream and Discord chat on the day of.
Yes. So, yeah, we're planning on doing that. But hopefully, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm John Matos. Writer at on Twitter, you can find out when we're going to stream more of this, hopefully on Twitch, to test out the camera and different stuff like that. But also, because this is inspired by Total Biscuit and his vendetta against unchallenging games,
I think it is challenging. We can talk about
it. You can go to bowelcanceruk.org.uk and donate there, because his wife has said to donate there in support of cancer research. We're going to miss you, John. And he was really good at talking about the different stories and things that come out of games, and what makes a challenging game, and what makes for good game practices. Heaven knows, with things like Gamergate going on, we were all hoping that there would be some people in the gaming industry to latch on to as, you know, people that weren't out there looking for controversy and looking for, you know, tribalism during that time. And he was really good at that. So support that if you can. Support us at that for the Arecibo playthrough if you can. And also, we have a Patreon now, patreon.com/thinkoutsidethebox. And you can support this show and more art and more storytelling from us. Thanks for listening, and you can email unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com if you want to talk about this or any of our upcoming episodes. Do you know what we're doing this coming week?
I don't remember.
I think maybe Incredibles is coming out soon.
That's
we're hoping
the next
to see that.
Week, though,
oh no! Wait, I think maybe next episode is the Ocean's 8.
Oh yes, yes.
Because we are fans of like heist stuff, and I think specifically we're going to talk about like She Stole Your Heart. I think we're going to call
female
it
female versions of movies.
Well, like I like the whole lovable criminal thing.
Oh okay.
And so we're going to get into that.
Femme fatales.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And then we're going to do an episode on The Incredibles and superheroes of a certain age. if I can pull it up, I'll let you know. More episodes coming up. Eventually we're going to talk about Taylor Sheridan, who is a writer who did Sicario and is coming out with Sicario 2 soon, but also did Wind River. And
also known as We Love Benicio del Toro.
He's a big reason why that movie was amazing. But he also did Taylor Sheridan wrote Wind River, and he did what was that? There was another lovable criminal duo. I wanted to say Brokeback Mountain. That's not right.
No.
Not the right movie.
Oh, the Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water.
Yes.
Very good. So we'll be talking about that. And then eventually we're going to get into YA dystopias and whatnot, but that's in August. So anyway, if you want to talk about stories and any of our previous episodes or upcoming episodes, don't hesitate to write in. This has been Unboxing Story. Bye-bye.
Bye.